It's time for the Access of Easy podcast, the weekly technology digest that keeps you ahead of the curve. Brought to you by EasyDNS.com.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Access of Easy podcast, the latest and greatest in data breaching and overreaching. Lots of both tonight. My name is Joey. That's Len, brother. What's going on over there?
Doing laundry right now. I don't know if you could hear it in the background.
I can't, but I'm going to do some after. I have to wash my winter coats. They're starting to smell a little ripe because usually I get up in the morning and go for a hard walk with the dog. So they're pretty sweaty. I got to wash them up.
It's time, brother. It's time.
It's time. Shameful and embarrassing that I haven't yet. Let's get right into it. We got a handful of stories here. One, I'm very interested in this Edmonton police one. Facial recognition. I mean, they're never going to learn. Let's go to last week's quote first and foremost. Go for it now. The future is promised to no one. That was by Wayne Dyer. Brandon, shout to you, buddy. You're the winner from last week. This week's quote, accept the challenges so that you can feel the exhilaration of victory. If you know who that was by, put it in the comments. Don't forget, you can only look at the stickers on your water bottle from 1988 when you were at camp and putting all sorts of stickers on your water bottles. If you don't find it there, you can't search on Google. You can't look it up. And of course, you put it in the comments, the answer that is. And if you get it right and you're the first one to get it right and Mark likes you, you get your next round of renewals on EasyDNS.
Why does the second part have to be valid? Can't somebody just get it right and then that's sufficient?
I told you before, talking to Mark, this is on one of the episodes. It's actually on an Access of Easy that we did when we were in Montreal. If you won already recently, you can't win again. And there's tons of comments. Fair. I do the podcast post and I'm now like working on some of the back end on Access of Easy. And so I see it. There's tons of people listening to this show and commenting. So I'm sure every week he can get a new winner. It's easy as hell for him, for sure. Shall we? Edmonton Police.
I'm blown away the fact that it's arbitrary who was the winner. I thought it would just be.
It's not necessarily arbitrary, but how many free renewals do you need?
Okay, that granted.
Is the answer somebody more? Maybe the answer is just more.
If two people get the right answer, is it first? Whoever answers it first?
It's an arm wrestle. It's an arm wrestle. It's you have to go on speedtest.net and see who's got the faster connection, and whoever gets faster connection wins.
Isn't it Spank the Monkey or something when you tap the
keyboard? Yeah, I forgot about that that website. Yeah, that's a good one.
Was it? No, it's the mouse. You spam the mouse. Is that what they call it?
I can't remember. The other one that I just found out about, this is unrelated to the show, but since we're talking about speed tests, did you know Netflix owns fast.com? And the reason they bought it apparently is because internet providers in the early days of sort of data throttling and data management on the provider side, they weren't letting people watch Netflix and they were saying, oh, your connection's not fast enough for Netflix. And so Netflix bought this thing and started showing people your connection's plenty fine. It's your provider that's throttling you. Smart. That's good marketing, man. That's really good marketing.
Interesting. Yeah. Blockbuster really blew it by not buying them up.
They should have bought fast.com. Anyway. This is okay. What are your thoughts on? I mean, we'll talk about the story, obviously, but overall, your thoughts on facial recognition on police?
It's potential exposure for mass surveillance, and it's absolutely brutal for people that are unaware what I'm talking about. It's this new pilot project that the Edmonton Police they're doing. They started it, and it's this facial recognition stuff, exactly what you said. So it's going to be using the body cameras that they have. Cops have this on their body these days, given what's transpired in the past few years and the demand on them. So this type of thing has never happened in Canada. It's facial recognition stuff. This is the first of its kind over here. And so they were the cameras, right? These regular cameras to, you know, when they do anything. So that way, if there's any wrongdoings, they could say this wrong. Or if there's any right doing, we could say, look, the criminal's an idiot. And, you know, they're just trying to saying that the cop is wrong and it's not the case. But either way, so having this camera, they're going to push this envelope. They're going to push it as far as they can. Launched this month, it's a proof of concept. It's the very least, at least it's just a proof of concept pilot project. And 50 officers are going to be using this camera. It's going to be provided by a U.S. technology company, Axum Enterprise. So they're not going with a overseas, like Chinese or whatever. They're using a U.S. base because I would imagine they want to keep everything at least as close to their partners as possible rather than using somebody from China. Who knows what happens with that information? Yeah. So the Edmonton Police, they say that the goal here with this, right, is to provide improved public safety. And how they're going to do this, it's going to quickly take pictures of people within, if you're within a 4-meter radius. It's a 4-foot or 4-meter. I can't remember what it was.
It's 4-meter. Way, 4-meter.
4-meter radius. And it's going to be scanning pictures and doing it on a silent mode. And that way, it's going to be actively recording and comparing against databases, 6,300 individuals that the police are interested in.
Just the EPS, just Edmonton Police database. Doesn't go across, doesn't go to the province. As far as we know, it doesn't go to the province, doesn't go to the RCMP, just there.
And they say that if it flags, it's going to be dealt with later on. But they say they're going to be deleting everything. This is the thing that I just, anything that they capture and they say they're going to delete, I don't buy it. I don't buy the fact that information is going to be, so they're going to be capturing tons of information. They're going to be capturing your facial features. They're going to be scanning this in accordance to their database of other people. People have gotten facial recognition wrong in the past.
Yeah.
And if they do that and then they nab you for doing something that you didn't do, well, obviously that's not right. Also, like, this is now becoming massive surveillance. China does this, right? They, if you look at Chinese, how much information they gather from their citizens, from traffic cameras and cameras on the street, that's for their social credit. How much longer before something like that is implemented here in Canada? You cross, jaywalk, or you know, you're gonna get mailed a ticket. Like, you know what I mean? Like, come on, man. It's almost to the point. Remember, until just not too long ago, we had the cameras catching speeders, and it wasn't stopping them. It was just mailing them a ticket into the future. The Ford government stopped that. But it's kind of in line with that. It's just this constant surveillance going on, and you can't live your life the way that you want. If there's nobody around, like, why are you being scanned? Why are you being, like, just, this is brutal. Step in the wrong direction.
What is the expectation here for the police that are using this technology? Like, is the expectation that this is going to reduce crime?
If they say they could capture somebody that's out and about,
yeah,
before they are going to be doing something worse or something, you know, if they already have a criminal record and they should be nabbed, and they're going to do something else, they want to stop them before they do something else. I think that's the idea behind it. But what cost? The cost is your privacy.
They say,
you know, everybody's interacting with police. So you walk, you just interact like, hello, how's it going?
Well, this is the problem everywhere. I have, right? The problem I have is that they say this is going to look for people who have warrants out for their arrest. Okay. Isn't the problem all over this country that we actually don't keep people in jail once we grab them? So grabbing them again, what function does it serve? Like, think about this from sort of core principles here. What function does it serve the community to catch somebody? If you catch them and release them, it doesn't serve any purpose. It's procedural. It costs the community. It costs the taxpayer and doesn't actually increase the level of safety in the community because the person is back out. So it's sort of, I think this is, first of all, an admission of failure from this police department and from the city, that they're not keeping people who have warrants out for their arrest in jail. That's problem number one. Problem number two is that I do not trust anything that scans my face ever. I don't ever want to know that I've been out and about and, you know, like the article points out, just in public, existing in public, and have my, you know, facial scan processed, run against a database of criminals, blah, blah, blah. I don't like that at all. And the third thing I will say is that I don't believe for a second that this is the, like you said, last step in this process. The likelihood that they pilot something like this and then claw it back is what, 5%, somewhere between 0 and 5%, you know? Like the likelihood that they give this power back or stop themselves from using facial recognition tools, it's not going to happen. So why are we pretending that this is the, you know, program that's going to just be a pilot and we'll see how it goes? That it's just so obviously doublespeak. And eventually, Len, yeah, I think there is a possibility that you will have problems with someone posting something on Twitter behind their digital ID. They'll chase a digital ID down, match the picture. What's this guy doing here? Let's ask him. I want to also point out that many Canadian cities stopped stop and frisk programs and other community engagement programs. Because why? Because it was a violation of rights of minorities, poor people, whatever. It's just such bunk, because those people in the past committed crimes. They're in communities where crimes are high, communities where safety's at risk. But this is okay. I think this is insane. This should be universally viewed as a bridge too far, and everybody should be shouting this down. But of course, nobody will, because what happens if you shut down a new police initiative? How's your day going to look?
Well, it really depends what side of the fence. A lot of people were talking about defunding the police. And on top of that, the people that straddle that side of the political spectrum, they occupy Edmonton. Edmonton is less of center for Alberta. Yeah,
for sure.
So you figure that if anybody would be talking about this, right? Talking about spending more money for the police and...
Maybe, yeah.
Right? But no, apparently it's not the case.
I really have a big problem with this. I'm surprised. Okay, last question, then we'll move on. I don't want to drag this out too long, but are other police departments already doing this and not saying anything? Toronto, Hamilton, the big PDs around the country? Is this technology in cars? Is it, you know, like what is the... I would not be surprised by any of this. I find it hard to believe that the first police department doing this is Edmonton.
And Alberta of all places too.
You know, like it does not really make a lot of sense to me. I don't buy it.
Yeah. Let's talk about something else that doesn't make sense, is how much time Marquee Software Solutions decided to report what happened with them. It's a funny one, because these guys, Marquee Software Solutions, they're based out of Texas. And these guys specialize in marketing and compliance software used by a bunch of U.S. banks and credit unions.
Hilarious.
And they recently told their clients that they were breached all the way back in August. We're now in December.
And is that a long time? Can we get a fact check on that, please? How long has it been?
Don't worry, they're going to rectify it now. It's the same old stuff. But before I explain what it is, they say the attack was a ransomware attack, and that began on August 14th of this year. And they suspect... they checked out their network. There was some suspicious activity going on over there, and it was later confirmed to be a cyber attack. And so they launched an investigation. They figured out that somebody on the outside was exploiting a vulnerability in a company's SonicWall firewall. That was a zero-day attack, by the way. Again, third-party software that's been zero-day attacked, and these guys didn't get owned as a result. And what that happened there, they were able to bypass the systems, get into it, and steal internal files. And they say that, 400,000 individuals living in the U.S. may be impacted. And the people behind it, it looks like it may be the Akira ransomware gang. And Akira reminds me of a Street Fighter name, doesn't it?
Akira. Yeah, I guess. Sure. Or a car. I don't know.
I don't know. For some reason. Anyways, so what was taken is just, it's names, addresses, date of birth, social security numbers, tax identification numbers, financial account numbers, nothing of importance here. And they say this took place in August. And the review, by the way, which they did, the internal review, wasn't completed until October 27th.
Like, they unionized or what? What's going on over there? How did that take so long?
They sent out letters to the impacted individuals in late November and early December. And they said they're dealing with cybersecurity experts. They contacted the police and get the enforcement involved. And they said that they've enhanced their security controls. They have now included firewall devices that have been updated. They applied stricter account lock policies, MFA, stuff like that across their network. Oh, by the way, they're also giving 12 or 24 months of credit monitoring to people out there, which is absolutely fantastic, right? That's industry standard, right? You lose all your information, and what do you get? It is credit monitoring and identity protection for a year or two. Like, this is an absolute joke. The amount of time they took to do the investigation, the amount of time they took to notify people, and what they're offering people, that's a three strike, you're out deal. Like, shame on them.
What are we supposed to do to protect ourselves from stuff like this? Banks, again, using third parties to do certain tasks for them on the security side, data side, whatever. Compliance, in this case, of all things. Like, you really are. I sound like a broken record on this show sometimes. I realize that. But it really is frustrating as a person who uses a lot of these services. Luckily, not this one in particular, but, uses a lot of these services. You can't protect yourself at all. There's nowhere to hide. These guys, like you said, 700 banks and credit unions. It's another supply chain attack. Like, there's nothing new in any of these attacks. And yet, the companies that are the most obvious targets do nothing to protect themselves. Why? I shouldn't say do nothing, but they're insufficiently protected. And then, by the way, as if you have to, like, ask any questions about, well, what was the security like over there? It took them 2 months to figure out what the problem was. So, not great is how the security was over there. I don't know, man.
This is why you got to hand it to companies like Ledger. When they ever get breached, they let us know right away. And it happens frequently enough that we suspect them they're going to get breached.
They got a template release, template email send out. Yeah, right, send it out, right thing out. Yeah, send all clients, all client list.
And we'll send you an altcoin as a instead of kind of monitoring. Here's an airdrop. Here's an NFT. Anyways, let's talk about this. React server components and the React and the Next.js, this is stuff there. It's a collection of tools and libraries that are used. And so the React server components, this has a vulnerability or had a vulnerability. It allowed for somebody to run remote code execution. And the problem was in the React's flight protocol. And that's responsible for communication between a client and server components. So this was done when a server processes a specifically designed payload from an attacker. And since it fails to validate the structure correctly, it allowed the attacker to inject and execute privileged JavaScript code on the server, and then they could run stuff. And the way they did this was nothing more than a malicious HTTP request to an endpoint that was already exposed. Good news is there are ways to fix this. You can run the update. So if you're running React, if you're one of the users, install the versions 19.0.1 to 19.2.1. Those have been fixed. Also, Next.js users should upgrade to the latest major release and you'll be okay. Nothing really said over here, but you know, they got screwed over, these guys.
Yeah.
These people running this group of libraries here.
That this would not happen with EasyDNS, by the way, I don't think. Mark probably has something in place to protect against this. The scary thing is that it lets you, the hackers, I should say, run their own code on servers without needing a password. How's that possible? That sounds nuts.
Yeah, it's the payload that they don't validate.
Yeah.
And they just simply, so the new patches do some better validation, so it doesn't allow for these scripts to be run.
Yeah.
So yeah, they just found a vulnerability within, like, as software gets more and more complex.
Yeah, I can't test it. Can't test it.
It's hard. Yeah, it's hard to test everything, to find every loophole. Well,
we talked about this with Cloudflare too, right? Like, Cloudflare's got such a complex suite of stuff that you can't backtest everything before you ship a new version. And presumably that's what causes some of these outages, right? Like, we talked about the bot management thing. Now here we are talking about HTTP attacks. And the worst part about this is it's basically 100% successful. Every time it's tried, it works.
So just to give you an example, like how complex things get, the Linux kernel, the last one of the later ones, 40 million lines of code.
Wow.
I want to know how much the original kernel.
Be curious. Yeah. Well, how much of that is new? Some of these, while you look that
10,000.
So there you go, right? Like, how much, I don't know if Linux is bad for this, but we talked about this concept in the past, technical deficits, where you're just coding on top of other stuff because you don't know if you can remove something without ruining everything below it or after it. And so you wind up with just these layers and layers and layers of, you know, what I think probably those companies would call redundancies and fail safes, but really it just winds up increasing the attack vector and the attack, surface area, right? So,
yeah,
you're seeing that more and more. And you and I almost never talk about holes in young projects. Do you find that weird? Is that a coincidence that we don't talk about holes in young projects that often, but it's actually most of the time these bigger projects with, like you said, tons of lines of code, tons of variability, tons of complexity, and there's always a gap, right? Someone finds a gap.
You know where you find it in these young projects though, Joey, is when it's like DeFi and stuff like that, and then they could basically get in. That's the absolute worst.
They're just poorly engineered, some of those things, right? Yeah, I agree with you there. Sure.
And I guess that's a lot that. With new software. They just are a lot of it. I mean, it may
AI code, or maybe.
Yeah. To go back, what I was saying, the original Linux kernel had a little bit over 10,000 lines of coding. The last Linux kernel, at least the one earlier this year, 40 million. So that's a what's happened in the past 30
thousands fold expansion. Yeah.
Incredible. So this one, I think you're going to want to talk about in depth. It's the India's Department of Telecommunications. They issued, and there's, by the way, since the information came out from, we got this from Mark, there's been an update to this too. So anyways, what it is that India, they're issuing a directive. This is back just last week, November 28th. And they're ordering all smartphone manufacturers. These are like the big ones like Apple and Samsung. And they're telling them that they have to install some state-owned cybersecurity applications. And I'm not even going to go into pronouncing the name of it. I would totally butcher it. And they want this application on all new devices within 90 days. That's their mandate. And they say that it must be readily visible and accessible to users. And, well, they don't want it to be able to be deleted on there, stuck there, and you're forced to have to deal with it. And the Indian government, they're saying that the reason for this, they want to have this installed, is to stop or slow down cyber fraud. If anywhere it's happening, I guess it's in India.
They're not trying to stop those people from stealing from me. They're trying to stop them from stealing from each other. Predictive, like, is that okay?
And also the stolen devices, people steal cell phones and they want to better track them with the IMEI. And so, well, Apple says, you know, they got this request and they dumped it in the trash. They said, no, they're not going to comply. There are security and privacy issues from installing third-party state-mandated applications. They're not going to do it. It's going to violate their global policies. And looking at this, you know, people are saying this is potentially a way for mass surveillance. Maybe they should also give the police over there ways to scan people's faces. And it's a way for potentially snooping on people. Like, you're installing an application on a phone and who knows what it does. But the government, they came to their senses. So just yesterday, they said they revoked the mandate to pre-install this stuff. And the government, they do still say that the app was secure and was intended purely to help out citizens. That's the case, if it was secure and going to help out citizens, why the about face? I don't know. Maybe they were basically called to, you know, they it was judgment and they were found guilty for wanting to install stuff that nobody wants on their phone, but yet they were being forced to do it. You know, what could you say? It's terrible stuff that if they did, but this didn't happen. It's not the only time this has happened. Back in 2021, I think it was, Russia was asking, and they told Apple to do it too. They wanted some applications, Russian applications installed on phones over there. Like, this crap happens all over the world. Like, why? Just leave the phone the way it is. You know, like, why do we have to install state surveillance software?
I mean, you know why.
Of course.
India, like many other countries, is a stone's throw from an uprising. UK, Canada, America, all getting closer and closer. These software mechanisms, especially in India, are meant to prevent riots, I would guess. Sounds like it's location tracing, among other things. So, you know, again, I've said this many times, private conversation, private action are the enemy of the state at this point in basically every case. I don't think this is any different. It might be the most extreme case, actually, anywhere in the world. There's what, 1.5 billion people in India? So, you know, you're looking at quite a disaster if there is a uprising of any kind. So they want to halt that. I commend Apple for not doing this. At least that's their stance now. I think Apple should withdraw from this market. I think Apple should withdraw from any market where the government is asking for this kind of nonsense. And I will tell you that the reason I think that, and the reason I think it's doable for them and also a great PR move, is that people in North America will freak out if they can't get an iPhone. People in Europe will freak out if they can't get an iPhone. And right now, Android penetration in India is very, very high. And Apple has not really that much to lose by losing that market. So I would just not, I mean, it's easy for me to say, I don't know what Tim Apple's going to do, but it seems to me like the only move here is to just withdraw and be very public about why and put some pressure on that leadership. Apple might be the biggest multinational in the world in terms of influence. So I'd like to see them actually use that muscle for something positive. And I think they can do it here.
Let's talk about this click fix attack.
Sure.
And people, they are more interested in using stuff like ChatGPT and Grok, Gemini, whatever the heck. And not just people, but also criminals. They want to use that to exploit and to make things easier for them. But also with that, they're trying to exploit people that want to use it as well. And so one of the ways they're doing it is through social engineering. And in this one, though, instead of using a email to send out and try to scam people, they're tricking people to click on clone websites that appear to be legitimate. So this is being done with ClickFix, and it's trying to get users to click on these clone websites. They look like the real McCoy, but they are not. They're copying popular services. And well, what it does, it installs, if you go through it, it installs a fake chat GPT Atlas AI browser. We talked about the Atlas AI browser not too long ago.
Yeah.
And so this is a fake one. People are downloading the fake one through a website. It looks like it's legitimate. You know, they want to go to ChatGPT and do it. So ultimately what this is doing when they install this fake stuff, it's going to be trying to get your credentials, because users are dumb as crap. It's not like it's installing a fake browser. No. It's asking for people, when you click on it and do it, it's asking for people to go into the command prompt and type in a particular command. And it's not like a simple one like DIR or copy or something we know. It's something that's cryptic that people don't know what's going on. When you do it, it executes a malicious remote code. And with that, it continually prompts the user to enter the password until the correct one is entered. And it's doing the super user password. And it's keeping asking you, once you get that password and it's entered correctly, it's sent to the criminals. They're able to use that and get access to your computer, and it's game over. Like, they have essentially privileges beyond like anybody else should have. It's full administration privileges. So all it is, it could bypass even CrowdStrike and SentinelOne, like the firewalls or any security surrounding that. So yeah, just people they're duped left, right, and center. Here's another one. If they go on these fake websites, they download stuff, then they're asked to put it. How dumb are you?
The boomers. I'm telling you, like, who else is falling for this? My first point was going to be, who is falling for this? It has to be the boomers. No one. But first of all, no one uses ChatGPT on their desktop, really. And like, the other thing is, who is going into the command prompt to put this stuff in? It's just not happening to younger people. It's just not. They're not
dumb.
Does
ChatGPT have an application
for Windows?
For a phone.
Oh yeah, there's an iPhone app. I don't know if there's like there probably is an Android app. I don't know if there's a Windows app. But you need to be on computer to do this. A command prompt, like it's a Windows machine. So, like it's boomers. Listen, I know there's a lot of boomers listening to this show. It's not you, boomer. It's just boomers in general. Who are having these problems. And it's like, what? Like, why? Why are you? Don't turn your computer on unless your kids are there. Like, that's the rule, you know? Like, that is the rule. It may annoy them, but if you don't, you're going to wind up getting your entire life turned upside down because you wanted to make a picture of Donald Trump riding an eagle with a machine gun or something on ChatGPT. Like, it's not worth it, man. It's not worth it.
Or just open up that Pentium Pro that you have from back in the day and play some solitaire or pinball. The Minesweeper. Just stick to that, right? And then,
if you're not playing Wolfenstein, you're not using the computer today, Dad. Okay. Good show. Thanks for coming, everyone. Listening, watching, viewing us on YouTube, whatever you were doing. Don't forget accessofeasy.com for the newsletter. There's always more stories there than what we talk about on the show. Subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe to the YouTube channel on YouTube. And until next time, take care of yourselves. Take care.